So, every time you see that little padlock icon on your messaging app, you're actually looking at a massive blind spot.
Yeah, it's pretty wild when you really think about it.
Right, because, well, today's encryption algorithms know exactly how to keep a secret, but it turns out they have absolutely no idea who they are keeping it for.
Exactly. I mean, the cryptography protects the tunnel the message travels through, but it is, completely blind to who is actually standing at the end of that tunnel.
It's the ultimate paradox of modern digital security.
Oh, absolutely. We have built these impenetrable cryptographic fortresses, yet the systems building the walls don't even check the IDs of the people walking through the front door.
And that is exactly why we're here. Welcome to today's deep dive. We are targeting that exact vulnerability today.
Yeah, we've got some really fascinating source material to go through.
We do. We are exploring a highly detailed technical paper that proposes a completely new reference architecture for secure communication.
And it does this by taking two heavy-hitting technologies and, well, fusing them together.
Right. So those two tech stacks are KERI, which stands for Key Event Receipt Infrastructure, and MLS, which is Messaging Layer Security.
Two very different but very powerful concepts.
Exactly. So our mission for this deep dive is to decode this architecture. We want to discover how combining these two distinct layers creates a decentralized, radically secure foundation for the future of digital collaboration.
It really is a glimpse into the future of how we'll communicate online.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Yeah.
Because to truly grasp the elegance of this solution, we have to look at why the current standard is failing us, right?
Right. And the failure really comes down to how the industry treats identity and encryption. They treat them as entirely separate, isolated silos.
Like they don't even talk to each other.
Pretty much. If you look at traditional public key infrastructure, or PKI, the entire model of establishing identity and handing out certificates relies on centralized certificate authorities.
And as anyone following cybersecurity knows, relying on a central certificate authority introduces a glaring single point of failure.
Oh, massive. You are trusting a central middleman.
Right. And if that middleman is compromised, or, if a government pressures them to issue a fake certificate, the entire trust model just collapses.
It's a house of cards. Now, on the other side of this architectural divide, you have MLS, messaging layer security.
Which is incredible at what it does.
Oh, MLS is an absolute powerhouse for scalable encrypted group communication. It provides what we call forward secrecy.
Meaning, if your device is compromised today, the attacker cannot read the messages you sent yesterday.
Exactly. It also handles member changes in massive group chats with incredible mathematical efficiency.
But there's a catch.
Yeah, the blind spot. MLS intentionally leaves identity management completely out of its scope.
So it literally does not care who is in the group chat.
Not at all. It only manages the math of the encryption keys.
Okay, so then we bring in KERI, the Key Event Receipt Infrastructure.
Right. Now, KERI is entirely focused on identity, but it operates without those central certificate authorities we just talked about.
So it's decentralized.
Highly decentralized. It uses these things called autonomous identifiers, or AIDs. And the core mechanism is a key event log, or a KEL.
A KEL, got it. What exactly does that log do?
It's basically an immutable, cryptographically verifiable ledger. It records every single time an identity rotates its keys.
Okay, but KERI doesn't natively handle the group messaging layer, right? It verifies the identity, but it doesn't encrypt the chat itself.
Exactly. That's the missing piece.
So, think of it this way. MLS is a crew building an ultra-secure VIP vault. They are installing constantly changing locks, soundproofing the walls, ensuring nobody can listen in.
Was your forward secrecy.
Right. But the MLS crew has absolutely no idea who's actually sitting inside the vault.
They're just the builders.
Yeah. KERI, meanwhile, is the ultimate bouncer standing outside. KERI has a permanent, undeniable ledger of everyone's identity and every time they've changed their badge.
I like that analogy.
But KERI doesn't build the vault.
Right. And what the authors of this paper propose is that these two technologies naturally complement one another. But, and this is key, provided you maintain a strict separation of architectural layers.
So they shouldn't be completely mashed together into one thing.
No, you have to keep their roles clear. KERI answers the question, who are you? While MLS answers the question, what is the current shared encryption state?
So basically, let the bouncer be the bouncer and let the vault builders build the vault.
Exactly. The engineering challenge, though, is how to stitch these two completely distinct systems together securely.
Without accidentally reintroducing a central database to manage the connection, I'm guessing.
You hit the nail on the head. Because if you bind them using a central server to just say, you know, this carry identity owns this MLS key.
You've just ruined the whole point of decentralizing the system in the first place.
Precisely. So it comes down to separating the keys themselves. In this architecture, every participant maintains two entirely distinct classes of keys.
Okay, two classes.
First, you have identity keys, managed exclusively by Kyrie. Second, you have encryption keys, managed exclusively by MLS.
So they each get their own set of keys to play with.
Right. The identity keys are used for authentication, creating signatures, and appending events to that Kyrie key event log. The encryption keys are used strictly for the MLS key agreement and, you know, locking up the actual group messages.
Wait, why do we need two entirely different sets of keys?
What do you mean?
Well, wouldn't it be simpler to just use one master key for both my identity and my encryption? Like, if Kyrie is already doing the hard work of verifying who I am, why can't we just use that same Kyrie key to encrypt the chat?
Ah, I see. What's fascinating here is that separating those keys is the exact mechanism that generates the security.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, in a secure group chat, for forward secrecy to function properly, the encryption state needs to change constantly. Keys must rotate rapidly to protect new messages and discard old key material.
Okay, that makes sense.
So if your core identity key was tied to your encryption key, your foundational identity would have to change every single time the chat updated.
Ah, so your identity would become this chaotic moving target just to keep the chat secure. That sounds like a nightmare to track.
It would be. By separating them, your identity remains completely stable. It is anchored and verifiable through the Kyrie layer,
while the encryption side just keeps spinning and updating.
Exactly. The encryption state can iterate, update, and change constantly on the MLS layer without affecting who you are at your core.
The identity stays anchored, and the encryption stays fluid. I love that. So, how do they actually bind together at the exact moment someone wants to send a message?
The binding mechanism is remarkably straightforward, but cryptographically ironclad. When a participant wants to join a chat, they publish an MLS encryption key.
Okay.
But before anyone in the group trusts that key, it must be cryptographically signed by their current Kyrie identity key.
Oh, wow. So the bouncer is literally stamping the Vault Builder's tools.
That's a great way to put it, yeah. And because that MLS encryption key carries the signature of the Kyrie identity key, it completely prevents an attacker from substituting a fraudulent MLS key.
Because the attacker doesn't have the Kyrie identity key to sign it with.
Exactly. An attacker might be able to generate a perfectly valid MLS key, sure, but they cannot inject themselves into the group chat because their key wouldn't carry the verifiable signature anchored in this legitimate user's key event log.
Okay, I think we can take these abstract concepts and look at how this actually functions in a real-life scenario.
Yeah, let's map out the anatomy of the secure conversation.
The paper provides a practical walkthrough of joining a group. So let's say Alice creates a secure workspace and wants Bob to join.
Okay, classic Alice and Bob.
Always.
Yeah.
So Bob receives an invitation containing the group ID, the current epoch, which is just the current state of the chat's encryption, the structural information of the group, and Alice's carry aid.
Right. And here is where the magic happens. Bob's client software does not just accept the invitation blindly.
It's a zero-trust environment.
Completely zero-trust. It automatically performs a rigorous verification sequence. First, it fetches and resolves Alice's key event log.
So it's double-checking her entire identity history.
Yeah, it checks the cryptographic hashes of every single event in her history to verify her current signing key is legitimate and that it hasn't been compromised or branched off into some unauthorized fork.
Got it. And if that checks out?
Then it verifies the signature on the invitation itself using that established key. Finally, it verifies the MLS encryption key presented in the invite.
So Bob's system only joins the group after the underlying cryptography basically proves Alice is exactly who she claims to be.
Exactly.
So once Bob is in, we get into the architecture of the MLS tree itself.
Right, because MLS moves away from the old model of encrypting a message separately for every single person in the room.
Which sounds exhausting for a system to do anyway.
It is. So MLS structures the group as a cryptographic tree. To visualize it, think of a corporate phone tree or, you know, a management hierarchy.
Okay, I'm picturing a pyramid shape.
Yeah, pretty much. The individual participants, the leaves of the tree, sit at the bottom. Each leaf holds that user's specific MLS encryption key.
And as you go up,
as you move up the hierarchy toward the root, the internal nodes contain derived secrets.
So if the CEO at the root of this tree wants to send a secure message to, like, 10,000 employees, They don't encrypt and send 10,000 separate letters.
No, they secure it once. The root produces what MLS calls the epoch secret.
Epoch secret.
Right. And from that, it derives the application secret, which is used to lock the messages, and confirmation keys to prove everything is synchronized.
So the message is literally just encrypted exactly once.
Yes. Because of that hierarchical tree structure, the cryptographic material just bubbles down to the leaves, meaning every authorized member automatically possesses the current epoch key they need to decrypt it.
That explains the efficiency of sending a message. But, I feel like the true test of any secure architecture isn't how it handles routine communication.
Oh, absolutely not. It's how things break.
Right. It's how it handles someone leaving, or worse, a catastrophic compromise.
Let's talk about basic member removal first.
Yeah, if Bob leaves the organization or is just removed from the group, how does the system ensure he can't read anything going forward?
MLS immediately generates a new epoch, a totally new state of encryption. Bob's leaf is removed from the tree, and the internal nodes above him are updated.
Just him?
Right.
Yes.
And because the cryptographic material flows in one direction, Bob cannot derive any future keys from the old ones he had.
So the moment Bob is out, the locks are changed. He can't read anything set after he left.
Exactly.
And because of forward secrecy, if his old keys are ever stolen from his device a year from now, the messages sent after he left are still completely safe.
That handles a standard departure perfectly. But the more complex scenario is a true identity compromise.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's invent a scenario here for the listeners.
Okay, let's hear it.
Think about your own corporate IT environment. A regional director leaves their laptop at a coffee shop and it gets stolen.
A nightmare scenario.
Right. In a standard PKI environment, this is a systemic shock. IT basically has to burn everything down.
They do. They have to contact the certificate authority, revoke the director's certificate globally, issue new certificates, push updates to every single server that director had access to.
And just hope the revocation list propagates before the attacker uses the stolen credentials to log in.
Exactly. But under this combined carry in MLS architecture, the recovery process is entirely autonomous and self-healing.
The director doesn't need to trigger a global meltdown.
Not at all. Using carry, they simply recover their identifier on a new device and rotate their signing key. They append this rotation event to their key event log.
So the immutable ledger now permanently shows, as of this date and time, the old key is dead, here is the new one.
Yes. Then the director's new client simply publishes a new MLS encryption key, signed by that newly recovered carry key.
Oh, wow. And what happens to the group chat tree?
Because of the tree structure we just talked about, MLS only have to update that specific affected branch. A new epoch is generated, and the rest of the massive corporate tree remains completely undisturbed.
It's surgical.
It really is. There is no global certificate authority to contact and no massive revocation list to download. The system heals itself locally.
And there's a specific term for this, isn't there?
Yeah. The industry term for this is post-compromise security.
Huh.
Once that recovery event happens and the new epoch is generated, all future communications become totally secure immediately.
That brings up a foundational question about trust in a decentralized system, though.
How so?
Well, if there is no central server and no certificate authority acting as the referee, how do we actually trust that this regional director's key rotation was legitimate? Like, how does Bob's client know that the key event log hasn't just been forged by the attacker who stole the laptop?
That is where Curie uses a network of witnesses.
Witnesses, like in a courtroom.
Sort of. Because Curie doesn't use a blockchain or a central database, it relies on independent infrastructure nodes that act as digital notaries.
Okay, so they just observe.
Right. These witnesses don't have the power to change anything. They simply observe and provide independent cryptographic receipts of the key event logs.
So they are holding a verifiable copy of the ledger.
Exactly. When our regional director rotates their key, that event is sent to a designated pool of witnesses.
And if the attacker tries to fake it...
If an attacker tries to fork the log and pretend they are the real director, the witnesses provide cryptographic proof of the legitimate sequence of events.
Oh, I see.
MLS relies on these rigorously verified identities, backed by the witness receipts, rather than operating on blind trust.
And when you scale this up to a massive organization, the efficiency of that tree structure really shines, doesn't it?
Oh, it's a game changer for scale.
Because if you have a secure channel with 10,000 people... and our director recovers their key, you don't have to update 10,000 individual connections.
No, membership updates only affect a logarithmic portion of the MLS tree.
Logarithmic, so a fraction of the whole.
Right. Instead of 10,000 individual updates, the system might only need to compute, say, 14 or 15 steps up the branch to reach the root.
That's incredible. It's the difference between a global system grinding to a halt during a security event and a system healing itself seamlessly in real time.
Exactly. It's built for reality.
But because Kyuri creates an immutable, permanent ledger of your identity and your receipts, it creates a long-term problem.
The quantum problem.
Yes. What happens in 10 years when quantum computers become powerful enough to break the math protecting that permanent ledger? If the architecture isn't built for that, we're basically going to have to rebuild the entire internet from scratch to protect those historical logs.
Which nobody wants to do.
Yeah.
The threat of quantum computing breaking current cryptographic primitives is exactly why this architecture features cryptographic agility.
Cryptographic agility. I like that phrase. It's basically just swapping out the engine without having to redesign the whole car.
That is a perfect way to describe it. The architecture is designed so that the underlying mathematical algorithms can be upgraded independently of the system structure.
So you don't have to change how carry or MLS fundamentally work.
Right. Currently, the carry identity keys might use standard algorithms like ED25519 for signatures. But when quantum-resistant algorithms become the standard, users can seamlessly rotate to post-quantum keys and log that rotation in their KEL.
Just another event in the log.
Exactly. The architecture of the key event log and the MLS tree remains exactly the same. Only the math running inside them changes.
Now, to prove how practical and deployable this is right now, before quantum computers take over, the paper actually outlines a reference implementation built using Node.js.
Yeah, they actually built a working prototype.
And what stood out to me in the source material is that they built this prototype using only Node's native crypto module. No massive external libraries.
This raises an important question about how we build software today. Mm-hmm. They utilize native AES GCM, which handles the actual locking of the message data. And HKDF, which is the engine that drives all those nested keys up and down the tree branches we talked about.
And by using those native tools, they totally eliminated the need for bloated third-party cryptographic libraries.
Which is huge for security. Minimizing dependencies directly minimizes vulnerabilities.
Because you aren't importing someone else's bugs.
Exactly. Every time you import a third-party library into a security architecture, you inherit any hidden flaws or supply chain vulnerabilities within that code.
Yeah, we've seen that happen way too often recently.
So by relying strictly on native cryptographic modules, the authors prove that this architecture is highly deployable today with standard tools while keeping the attack surface as small as absolutely possible.
So what does this all mean for you and the tools you use every day?
It's a big shift.
Yeah, we've gone deep into the mechanics of key event logs, logarithmic trees, and cryptographic agility. But zooming out, this completely shifts the foundation of digital trust.
It really does.
Yeah.
By binding MLS encryption to carry identities, organizations can build secure collaboration platforms that completely remove the middlemen.
You are no longer asking a third party for permission to trust someone.
Right. The architecture separates identity from confidentiality, allowing each layer to do exactly what it does best.
And it seems like it aligns perfectly with emerging decentralized frameworks.
It does. The authors actually note how this integrates with concepts like verified context graphs, which map cryptographically proven relationships between different entities.
And EntityOS, right?
Yeah, EntityOS, which treats identity as a foundational operating system layer.
Which brings us to a fascinating proposition at the end of the paper.
This was my favorite part.
The authors suggest extending this architecture into a full specification for autonomous organizations. So this is where the technology moves beyond just securing human group chats.
Right. A system where identity is autonomous, self-verifying, and completely independent of human administrators opens the door for non-human participants.
Think about the AI agents, automated services, and smart devices that are becoming, you know, deeply integrated into corporate networks right now.
They need identities, too.
Exactly. In the near future, this architecture allows an AI agent to operate as a first-class carry identity.
So the AI agent would basically generate its own autonomous identifier, manage its own key event log, and seamlessly negotiate group chats in MLS-secured channels right alongside human participants.
Using the exact same cryptographic rigor as a real person.
Yes.
Is that VIP vault we talked about at the beginning, but the bouncer isn't just checking the IDs of people anymore. It is independently verifying software, devices, and AI with absolute mathematical certainty.
It's wild to think about.
It really is. So I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over as you look at the messaging apps on your own phone today.
Lay it on them.
In a future where an AI has its own self-sovereign cryptographic identity, its own verifiable history, and its own autonomous encryption rights within a secure channel, how does that completely redefine our concept of what a team member actually is?
It fundamentally changes the landscape of how entities, human or otherwise, collaborate and build trust.
It really does. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the infrastructure of your digital world, and we'll catch you next time.